from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Top Democrats are calling for an investigation into a move by Justice Department officials to reduce the recommended sentence for President Trump's friend and advisor, Roger Stone. Four prosecutors on the case have now resigned. And coming up on Forum, we'll look at the independence of the DOJ under President Trump. Then at 9:30 for Californians, Super Tuesday won't just be about the presidential race. Voters will also be asked to make a big investment in the state schools. The only statewide measure on the March 3rd primary, Prop 13, would put $15 billion into California's public school buildings. We'll debate the measure. We'll take your questions all after this news. Join us next. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump's friend and advisor, Roger Stone, had been facing a stiff prison sentence after being convicted of lying to Congress and threatening a witness, among other crimes. Then top DOJ officials apparently intervened, recommending a more lenient sentence for Stone after Trump tweeted that the original sentencing request was, quote, disgraceful. Four prosecutors quit the case after the DOJ's move. And joining us now to talk about this story and threats to the DOJ independence in the Trump era is New York Times reporter Katie Brenner, who covers the Justice Department. She's with us from Washington, D.C. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Rory Little, who joins us here in studio, law professor at UC Hastings, who spent 7 years as a federal prosecutor. Welcome, Rory.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. Katie Brenner, let me begin with you. Here's an allegedly, from historic perspective, impartial DOJ interfering essentially in a sentencing. And have we ever really seen anything like this? This was a jury-decided sentencing, by the way. I mean, a jury-decided conviction, by the way.
Correct. So this is sort of activity is extremely rare, especially when you look at the history of the relationship between the Justice Department and the White House. So after Watergate, as we all know, Richard Nixon really leaned on the Justice Department to sort of do his political bidding and go after enemies. We saw the White House and subsequent administrations treat the Justice Department as an entity that needed full independence in order to have credibility, and we are seeing that shift now. So that is what makes this action much more significant, and it makes us all have to wonder what comes next. You know, how will the president start to try to lean on the Justice Department in the future if these sorts of things are happening today?
Well, it seems like the president and Attorney General Barr believe in a kind of absolute power, or certainly, I mean, the president said Article 2 of the Constitution gives me the right to do essentially whatever I want to as chief executive, and the Department of Justice is under the executive.
I mean, believing in a version of absolute power, as you put it, or very strong executive authority is one thing, but you can only push prosecutors in the Justice Department to, for example, charge people with crimes if a crime has been committed. And we can see on Twitter that President Trump very much wants people he would consider to be political enemies to be charged with crimes. He has untruthfully and wrongly accused people he doesn't like former special counsel Robert Mueller, of committing crimes. And so as he's making those allegations, it's clear that the next step could be asking the Justice Department to then pursue cases. However, the Justice Department can't pursue a case where there is none. And that's something, again, for future, I would be watching for, because that's going to not only apply pressure on the department, it's going to force Attorney General William Barr to face some really, really difficult choices.
It's also, Rory Little, very difficult for the prosecutors now. I mean, it casts a shadow over them, certainly, doesn't it, in terms of where the guardrails?
Well, yes. I mean, it's both dismaying and makes people angry because it takes so long to build up a reputation of fairness and neutrality. You know, it's not actually unusual for the top levels of the Department of Justice to express interest in individual cases, but to have the president pressuring individual prosecutors is really unprecedented. It's even worse than when Attorney General Mitchell went to jail after Richard Nixon. So the morale among prosecutors, and Katie has reported on this, is very low in the Department of Justice, and good people are leaving, which is always the question for a prosecutor. When do I reach a point where I'm willing to leave, even if I think the person replacing me is not going to be, you know, with the same integrity?
Well, Barr is also leading a criminal investigation into what led to the FBI investigation into whether the Trump campaign conspired with Russia back in 2016. So there really is a kind of trajectory here, a linear line, if you will. And there also are investigations of Comey and McCabe, who were heads of the FBI. I mean, it all fits a piece, really, in many respects. It's kind of a gestalt. You can't separate the parts from the whole.
Well, I think that's right. And what's disturbing about that, of course, is it looks very one-sided. This is not an investigation of other aspects. I mean, the Bob Mueller report recited a number of acts that might be called obstruction of justice, didn't reach any conclusion as to whether it was obstruction, didn't think he had that authority. But we don't see investigation into that. So when the people of the United States believe that it's a one-sided Department of Justice, it really destroys a version of integrity and independence that's taken 50 years to build back up since Richard Nixon.
Well, the president has said these prosecutors should go back to school. They need an education. That's something he tweeted, Katie Benner. But also, he's been attacking the judge in this case, Amy Berman Jackson. And Stone actually threatened her. She presided also over the Manafort case. One has to ask about this kind of non-normative activity. I mean, especially from a chief executive, president of the United States. Where are the guardrails?
Well, at this point, there are no guardrails, as we've seen. We've experienced 3 years of the Trump administration. There are not guardrails. He cannot be reined in. Any idea that he was going to become, quote unquote, more like a typical president, I mean, I don't think anybody believes that anymore. So I don't think we can be surprised at this behavior at this point. And I'm always sort of shocked when people are. I think it's more now we need to try to figure out what's the impact of the behavior. Has there been a chilling effect? I don't think that Judge Amy Berman Jackson would be intimidated by this, even though it's clearly an intimidation tactic. You know, but at this point, it's now we know exactly how President Trump behaves and we know what he will do and say. But what is the knock-on effect? So if we can see that the effect is that it quells a judge and silences her, well, then that is something completely different. And we're so close to the election that now it becomes an issue for voters, right? If we can see that it has put a chilling effect on the department, or if we can see that the department is doing things that are you know, beyond the scope of its authority or bringing sham investigations to bear, well, again, at this point, it's now a matter for voters because there is no necessarily, there's no executive guardrail. And the traditional guardrail of Congress is really hamstrung. Normally, Congress would be the guardrail. Normally, Congress would step in with its authority and, you know, ask for documents, subpoena documents, have some sort of oversight hearings to figure out what's going on. But we've also seen this Justice Department basically refuse to comply with subpoenas and to comply with those sorts of investigations. So
Congress also has the purse strings, though, Katie. I mean, they could theoretically at least hold back appropriations, or they could move an impeachment of the Attorney General, couldn't they?
I mean, indeed, they could, but it's February of 2020. We have only, you know, several months before the election. Certainly, they could do that. That's going to embroil Congress in a very difficult process, especially as members are trying to accomplish some things before the end of the year. So, impeachment of the Attorney General is certainly something they could do. The purse strings, I suppose. But again, when you start cutting the budget for the department and holding back money, what Attorney General Barr is doing, things that his lieutenants have done in the case of Stone, that is a fraction of a tiny, tiny, tiny scintilla of a percent of what the department does in its overall activities, right? They're also prosecuting real crimes. They are prosecuting drug crimes, human trafficking crimes, child trafficking crimes. Do you want to defund all of these activities because you are trying to go after the Attorney General and try to impose oversight over the department? That's a really tough choice to make.
Katie Benner with us from the nation's Capitol Justice Department reporter for the New York Times. And let me at this point, I'll go back to Lori Little, but I also want to give you an opportunity to join our conversation with any questions or comments you might have. You can give us a call right now, and I invite you to do that. The number to call is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. If you'd like to weigh in or if you have something you'd like to bring up or ask, you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum at kqed.org. And Rory, let me go back to you just in terms of what Democrats can do. Barr is going to be testifying on March 31st to the House Judiciary Committee. Of course, that's long after the November election. But to what extent can we affect at least or expect at least some kind of confrontation that will bring light or bring some kind of answers?
Well, there's two aspects to that. I mean, one, President Trump has figured out that Twitter is a whole lot faster than Congress. And by the time we hit March 31st, no one's going to remember today what has happened. And so it's remarkably slow and unsatisfying as a check or a balance. I do think they'll have some hearings. I think
as many say about the courts, too.
Well, and the courts, let me just say, the court is something else that we need to talk about. Thank goodness we have life tenure. I mean, people have criticized life tenure for federal judges. We're really happy that we have it now, even as Trump has replaced about a third or more of the federal judiciary. This kind of conduct, sort of threatening the judge, not just threatening the prosecutors, is really disturbing to federal judges. Chief Justice Roberts has made this very clear in a sort of oblique, dispassionate way like he does. They've got a lot of big cases up there in front of the Supreme Court this term. There are lots of big cases. And I don't think President Trump – I really think he's ignorant of how people work and how people think in this area. He is losing votes among life tenure judges. Judge Jackson is not going to back down in this. She's not going to give 7 to 9 years to Roger Stone. Even the prosecutors that recommended that knew they weren't going to get 7 to 9 years. But she's going to give some prison time. And more importantly, I think she's going to say something about this. And she's going to remark on the impropriety, if you will, of the executive branch trying to tell the judiciary what to do.
Well, in fact, we're talking about a president who has tweeted rather strong and condemnatory remarks about her, the judge in the case. And
with
all his millions of followers, who knows what kind of effect that has?
Well, and if a defendant in a case did that, that would be contempt
That's
of court.
Exactly
that
right.
would be imprisonment. So the president is running on an immunity hope right now. And Katie's right that the election is going to be the signal on this.
Let me read a comment by Pam, who writes, I think that Barr's interference with the Roger Stone prosecution is a dangerous erosion of norms and that the media is not treating it with the alarm that it should. I'm very discouraged at the continued behavior of reports interviewing or presenting both sides. To me, that's not doing the job. It's important for reporters to report facts, and the fact is that this behavior is not only unusual but a danger to an independent criminal justice system. There's nothing partisan about pointing out what the consensus has been. And let me bring in our callers, and we begin, Lewis, with you. Lewis, welcome.
Hi. I don't understand the analysis that I'm hearing here, because from what I can tell, Trump was elected to clear the swamp, and those prosecutors leaving are just that. As far as Bill Burr is concerned, nobody's pressuring him. He's a willing participant. He knows that the Democrats have no credibility now, and he's acting like he's going to protect the credibility of the government in light of what the Democrats are trying to do. And I have one more comment. I'll take my answer. I mean, you guys can talk about this without me, but I just want to say one thing to you, Michael. I hope that you do a show pretty soon on Malcolm X's killing and the Netflix special that's on, because my friends and I in the black community, we're going a little crazy after the news about Martin Luther King being a rapist and everything that came out not too long ago. The combination of these stories that are now coming out are driving us a little mad as far as finding out what a consensus is about American history. So I hope you do a show on it pretty soon.
All right, Lewis, I thank you for the call. Thank you for that suggestion. And Rory Little, let's go to you on this. Clear the swamp. That's what the president said. And now we've got all this talk about the deep state and everything else. Huh?
You know, nobody knows what these phrases mean, clear the swamp. But to me, the swamp is a dangerous place. And when you can't trust people that have been entrusted with a whole lot of power, which is what prosecutors have been given, to be neutral, to be nonpartisan. You know, Lewis is right to be suspicious, if you will, of the government. But God forbid he or any of his friends are suddenly in the sights of federal prosecutors, because if they're not friends of Trump, they're going to come down hard. And if they are friends of Trump, they're going to get a break that other people can't get. You know, the racial disparity in the criminal justice system is unbelievably strong. And this is not a president who has ever expressed any concern about that.
It's also tough on reporters like you, Katie, who are covering this. And when a caller brings up, for example, what can be interpreted certainly as one-sidedness, because you're saying essentially things that are not only out of the norm, but that really, I mean, it almost appears incontrovertible the president is maybe trying to settle scores here or protect his allies or go after his enemies and so forth. And a lot of presidents have behaved that way, but this kind of behavior is aberrant. It's outlier behavior.
I mean, I'm going to just push back on that a little bit, because, one, I don't think it makes it hard. This is the job. You know, this is our job is simply to report. So,
but you take flack for being biased against Trump, do you not?
But you know what? Taking flack, that's also part of the job. So I think that a couple of things. One, to the caller's point, the president was elected on his vow to clear the swamp. on his vow to basically bring to heel government employees who he feels have been out of control, and that he continued to define that throughout his presidency. He honed the definition of what that meant, which was to take out people who'd been his opponents, I think, a little bit more specifically. Now, I think there are two things at play. One, that is what the people who voted for him wanted. And again, so this becomes less of a question about reporting and more a question of politics, which I'm not involved in. It's not my beat. But how does the electorate feel about that in November 2020? Is that still what voters want? That's a question I can't answer. It's a question we're only going to get an answer to soon. So I can understand the caller's confusion when he hears criticisms of what sound like criticisms of this, because it is true that that is what voters wanted when they voted for him. I think that what the reporting is doing is a little bit different. It's saying, regardless of what Mr. Trump ran on, regardless of why he won, how he won, regardless of the fact that many people actually very, very, very much support every action he's taken, that doesn't make the action normal, and it doesn't make the action the normal course of business for Washington. Those two things can both be true. Voters can like the president and like what he's done, and what he's done can still be very, very, very unorthodox. So, you know what, to the caller's point, I agree. It's true. Many people support the president in his efforts to fight back against his enemies and to bring the Justice Department into his orbit and to use it as a tool of his presidency that he can use to, in almost a weaponized way.
A personal or political tool, yeah, though, which needs to be, I think, separated from a tool for government or for hire.
That's where the reporting comes in.
Yeah,
right?
That's where reporting
is
comes
the caller
in, indeed.
Wrong? Right. Caller's not wrong. Caller is correct. There are many people who support the president in that, people who voted for him in particular. The reporting, all the reporting is saying is that the use of the Justice Department as a personal tool for retribution, that is unorthodox and has traditionally, ever since Watergate, because Richard Nixon did it too, ever since Watergate has been thought of as incorrect.
All right. I want to bring more callers on, and Michael is next. Michael is calling us from Boston. Good morning.
Yes. First, a brief correction. It won't be the electorate that decide. It will be the electorate in a couple of states. That's really what it will come down to. My point is basically has already been made that his Trump's followers believe that the Justice Department was incredibly politicized because Hillary Clinton was not flogged in public. No, they've been in a propaganda environment in which they believe that the Justice Department is already just the personal tool of the president.
Yeah, you remember all of the talk about President Clinton on the tarmac, of course. I mean, that comes immediately to mind. And your point is well taken. I thank you for the call. What about that, though, Rory? I mean, how to separate, especially in the public's mind? There's a long history of corruption in politics on every level. And so a lot of people see this as just more of the same.
Yeah, you know, I want to push back a little bit on what Katie said. The idea that the people who voted for Trump in 2016, that this is what they wanted, I think is just completely inaccurate. Nobody actually knows what those people wanted other than they wanted a change and they didn't want Hillary Clinton. But they didn't. It's not like Trump went on to the campaign trail and said, I'm going to corrupt the Department of Justice. I'm going to undercut the independence that they've spent 50 years trying to build up. I don't think people voted for that. There are now groups called Republicans for the Rule of Law who have voted for Trump in 2016 and are now sort of avidly against the corruption of the values. And I also want to – Katie's a little defensive, I think, about her role, and she says, well, taking flack is part of the job. There's a big difference between taking flack, which a journalist must take, law professors must take, I'll have to take, you take, and being threatened. You know, Roger Stone posted a picture of the judge in his case while he was in trial with what looked like a crosshairs, and she did not put him in jail for that, which she could have. The idea that journalists should take flack is one thing. The idea that journalists should be threatened, cut off, violently attacked, which has happened in other countries, that's also happening right now because of the president's.
That's not what the question was about.
Trial.
I wasn't being asked if journalists should be attacked physically.
Let me go to something else here, actually, if I may, Katie, with you, and that is a question from Todd and a very important question. What oversight or powers does the Justice Department have over the elections and election results? Can I count on William Barr to protect my vote?
It's a good question. So in terms of election security, that's a combination of – it's sort of a horrible hodgepodge of authorities, including the Department of Homeland Security is really at the forefront of that, working with the FBI in terms of on the federal side. And then each state has its own election authority. So then you have also each, you know, state government plus the state election authority all basically working together to try to ensure election security. At this point, I don't think you can say it's really Bill Barr as a single human being would sabotage the system. You have, you know, more than, you know, 50, more than 100 fail points that could cause some sort of election day issue. And so I think you especially see on the Department of Homeland Security side and on the FBI side a lot of work being done to open the lines of communications with the states, which have traditionally been very fraught, those lines of communications, to try to create some sort of semblance that we can trust the election results. It's going to be very difficult.
It is indeed. And let me get another caller on that. You, Jake, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really am just astounded with how terrible William Barr has been for our country. He's really torn down all faith in the Justice Department on my end. And I really think he needs to be held accountable, not only for this, but the role he had in spinning and propagandizing the release of the Mueller report, which was very damaging to the narrative because nobody really paid attention to the conclusion. On top of that, I'd just like to reflect on the first caller you had on who mentioned that the career prosecutors were the swamp. And I think that's a dangerous precedent in itself that Trump has managed to make the people that listen to himself and his media outlets believe that someone like a career prosecutor who does excellent work for 30 years is all of a sudden the swamp that needs to be drained.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Jake. And let me go back to Rory Little, who was a federal prosecutor, to a question from Tim, who says the president says the four prosecutors went rogue. Any evidence of that? Do we know whether the department signed off on the 7 to 9 years before the recommendation was filed by the four prosecutors?
Well, you know, here's what we know. We actually know that in the past, top levels of the Department of Justice have exerted influence on politically sensitive cases. They usually don't do it in public. They don't do it via Fox News, which is what happened here. Yes, the U.S. attorney for the district saw this memo and approved its filing. There's been a lot of concern about the internal disarray that the Department of Justice is now exhibiting. Right, their mechanisms of guardrails within the department are really sort of fallen apart. I want to say a little bit about Bill Barr. I'm not happy about Bill Barr and what he's done, and I agree with the caller's criticisms. I do think he's actually trying to exhibit some kind of control on the department and trying to bring – he's trying to protect the career prosecutors in some sense by sort of letting the president vent in one case and meanwhile allowing the career people to do their important work. So as Katie said, the election security work.
It's an interesting defense. But, you know, Bill Barr was also hearkened to by the president to go off to talk to Zelensky and, you know, talk in the Ukraine with his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend Bill Barr as the attorney general, but I do think there's a value of the Department of Justice, which I think even Bill Barr understands.
Let me thank you, Rory Little, for being with us. Always good to have you.
Thanks.
Rory Little, again, is professor at UC Hastings College of the Law, former attorney with the U.S. Department of Justice. And thank you, Katie Benner. Always good to have you as well. Appreciate your being with us.
Aw, thank you.
Katie Benner is Justice Department reporter for the New York Times. And we have another segment of Forum up ahead. We're going to go local and talk about Election 2020, Prop 13, not the one you think of, $15 billion to fix the schools. Stay with us.